Welcome to Book Bistro, where book enthusiasts come to chat about the books they love in a warm and supportive environment.
Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. This is Shannon, and tonight I am here with Natalia and Stacy, and we are revisiting the fabulous topic of found family, or as I like to think of it sometimes, is blood really thicker than water? So, we will, of course, get started with the usual housekeeping information. And then I will start us off, followed by Stacy and then Natalia.
You can find us on Facebook by searching for Book Bistro Podcast. There we have our usual Facebook page where we keep track of our Wednesday reads and also post information about the Friday episodes. We also have a Facebook listener group that you're welcome to join. And if you prefer a different type of listener group, you can contact us and ask about our WhatsApp group. Both groups are pretty small, not super high traffic, and we would love to have you. If you want to get in touch with us off of social media, you can do so by sending an email to thebookbistropodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for our main hosting page, where you can find information on the podcatchers that make Book Bistro available to you, you can find that information in our show notes.
So my first book tonight is The Duke Heist, and this is the first book in Erica Ridley's Wild Winchester series. And this is a family made up of orphans who were adopted by a baron. This is a Regency romance. And all of these young children came into this man's home, and they were taught various skills. Some of them are skills that, like, they were sort of, you know, already born with that he just helped enhance. Others are things that he taught them specifically. And he was very, very big on social justice, like before, obviously, that's what we called it, because I don't think we talked much about social justice, like in Regency times, even though there were obviously people who knew that it was a thing. So these people sort of right wrongs that kind of fall, you know, outside the purview of the law or of, like, the people in power. And so the Baron has passed away by the time we meet these siblings, and his last wish for them was that they recover a stolen painting. And there's a whole, like, backstory behind this painting, but I don't want to give that away, so I'm not going to actually talk too much about the painting itself here. Now, the painting, what I will say is it belongs to a duke. And Chloe, who is our heroine and kind of a quiet, like, wallflower sort of person, she considers herself invisible. She fades into the background really easily. She thinks people are always kind of forgetting about her, underestimating her. And she is the one that her siblings turn to get this painting back. Now, it belongs to this duke named Lawrence. And Lawrence has kind of a hard family life. Like, the Winchesters are all very close. Their relationship is kind of, you know, on the raucous side. It's very, like, free and fun. But for Lawrence, family is really different. And so when Chloe hatches a plan to steal the painting by first abducting the Duke, and he's sort of swept up into this whole heist, And he finds himself in the midst of all of the Winchester hijinks. Like, he has no idea what to think. Like, first of all, nobody wants to be kidnapped. And then you're with all these people and they are just acting in ways that feel, you know, completely foreign to him. But slowly, he and Chloe form a relationship, as you would expect. But he also begins to understand what family really can be, and that the things that his father taught him to believe about, you know, how you prove your worth to your family aren't necessarily true. I love this series for its social justice themes, but also for its huge diversity. Like, these characters are diverse in terms of race, in terms of disability, in terms of sexual orientation. Like, everything about this is just like a glimpse of, you know, what the world should be. And there are 4 books out currently. The 5th one, I believe, is coming out in like August or September. If you've never read an Erica Ridley book, especially one in this series, I ever so highly recommend that you do. This one is The Duke Heist, and it's The Wild Winchesters, Book 1, by Erica Ridley.
And as you're talking about this book, I'm just sitting here wondering to myself, why have I not read this? Because it's all my things.
It is. You would really like this.
So my first book of the evening is one of my top reads of 2023. And I just reread it to make sure I remembered everything about it. And it continues to be a beloved favorite book. This is A Little Too Familiar, An Uncanny Romance, Book 1 by Lish McBride. And this book is about Louise/Lou. And Lou is living a pretty great life. She lives with her friends who are her roommates. And she has an amazing, enormous, supportive, blended family. And she is in the middle of her apprenticeship to become a switch. And that is a witch that can bond people with their animal familiars. And that's just her dream to, you know, kind of help both the animals and the people to achieve this bond. So life for her is going pretty well. Now, conversely, Declan McKenzie is not in a great place at the start of our book. Declan is a wolf shifter who does not currently have a pack. He has to leave Portland and his sister for a while for reasons that I will not spoil. And he has been offered by his friend Trick to come up to go to Seattle and stay with him and his guy roommates, Van and Lou. And Declan's like, okay, like, this is, you know, this is fine. I can go there and, you know, take a breath and figure out what's next for me, because what's next for me is not Portland and living with my sister right now, because he has to recover from something that happened. But Declan gets to Seattle, to the charming Craftsman House in Seattle, and right away discovers a couple quite surprising things. First, Van and Lou are not dudes. They're women. And also, Lou is a switch, and she is an animal mage, and an animal mage hurt him pretty grievously in his past. And at first, he's not even able to kind of be in the same room with her without panicking because of how this person impacted his life. But he's so alone and he doesn't have a huge savings. He, you know, doesn't know if he can pick up and move again. And he also knows that he hurt Lou's feelings by acting so upset when he first saw her. So he decides he's going to try to like stick it out for a little while and, you know, just kind of like hide in the house. So that's what he does at first. He kind of tries to stay small and quiet and try to make it up to Lou and to Van and Trick that he was so uncompromising in his feelings about Lou. But the problem is he's also intrigued by Lou. And slowly they begin to form a tentative friendship, and he's welcomed into the home among the friends. He's welcomed into Lou's family, and he begins to form his own pack. His own pack doesn't actually consist of any shifters. It's some witches and some mages, and it's a baby phoenix named Dammit and some ferrets, but it's his pack. And just as he's getting his feet under him and he and Lou are beginning to move beyond a friendship, something happens that rocks the entire foundation of both his world and Lou's, and basically sets in motion a chain of events that forces Declan to face a past that he would rather forget ever happened. And honestly, I know that I did not say much about this book, but I really don't want to give much of it away because it's like the loveliest thing I've ever read and I don't want to spoil anything. But I will say, I love the romance. I love it so much. But what I love just as much as the romance in this book are this, it's this amazing group of friends who support each other and live in this big house and have this gorgeous, gorgeous found family that they've created. Several of them come from backgrounds that are not the greatest with, you know, biological families that were not supportive, and they all come together and form their own little community within this house. And then, of course, there's Lou's enormous blended family that adds extra depth and love and support and takes in anyone who feels like they need to come over for family dinner or just needs a little bit of help along the way. And themes of family and diversity and acceptance are just very gently woven through the story. They don't smack you in the face, but they're just there. And it's just, the story just has this lovely, the author voice is just lovely. And I love everything about it. And I think everyone, if you like any sort of paranormal romance and you like strong themes of found family and learning to accept yourself and all of those things, I would definitely recommend that you pick up A Little Too Familiar, an Uncanny Romance Book One by Lish McBride.
This is on my list.
And if you enjoy audio narration and audiobooks, this book is read very beautifully in duet narration by Stella Hunter and J.F. Harding, and they do an incredible job, and it just really enhances the entire experience.
So the first book I'm going to talk about is a book that was very popular some time ago and that I really, really liked because it has all the elements that make me happy and make me think about a family that we make and not necessarily that we're born into. And speaking of happy, this is Happy Place by Emily Henry. And, well, Happy Place actually won the Best Romance 2023 for Goodreads. So that's cool. And this is about Harriet and Wynne, and they're the perfect couple. They've been the perfect couple since they met in college. They go together like salt and pepper, honey and tea, lobster and roll. Except that now, for reasons they're still not discussing, they don't. They broke up 6 months ago, and what's more, they haven't told anybody, especially not their best friends. And so, therefore, they find themselves now sharing the largest bedroom at the main cottage that has been their friends' group yearly getaway for the last decade. It's the group of friends that they made that is now family. They go away once a year and they have their respite from the world where they have a week together where they leave behind their daily lives. They sip wine, they have cheese, they talk, they don't worry. They soak up the coastal air with the people who understand the most, because who understands you better than good family? Except this year, Harriet and Wynne are lying through their teeth while trying not to notice how desperately they still want each other. And, well, the cottage that they usually stay at every year is now for sale, and this is the last week they'll all have together in this place, ever. And since Harriet and Wynne can't stand to break their friends' hearts, they play their parts, and they play them really well. Harriet will be the driven surgical resident that never starts a fight, and Wynne will be the laid-back charmer that never lets the cracks show. It's perfect, isn't it? And a flawless plan if you look at it from a great great distance and through a pair of sunscreen smeared sunglasses. But in a year of broken hearts, how hard will it be to fake it for 1 week in front of those who know you best, your family? And well, this couple that broke up many months ago make a pact to pretend to still want to be together with their best friends during their annual week-long vacation and to see what happens during this vacation and to see if they manage to fool their friends and for how long. You want to read Happy Place by Emily Henry. And I really enjoyed this book. I always enjoy books where people are really good friends and they share everything and they spend time together and they just, you know, found each other, because the family we're born into can sometimes be really great, but it's a privilege to be able to also make a family. And I feel that this book is super, this author in general is super good about showing interpersonal relationships, not only romantically, but also between friends, sisters, family. And I really loved everything about this book. I mean, there's a reason why it won Best Romance Novel of 2023 in Goodreads.
One of my very favorite things about urban fantasy is that so much of it contains found family.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's like something that's built into the series right away. Sometimes it forms as the series progresses. But whatever way it's done, it is just one of the best elements of urban fantasy. So I want to talk about Shannon Mayer and her Riley Adamson series. The first book is called Priceless. And this is urban fantasy, but I feel like it has kind of a post-apocalyptic feel in places. I haven't finished the series yet, so I can't quite, you know, put my finger on like why that is, but it gives me like some post-apocalyptic vibes just in the way that the world seems to be going in the series. It seems like we're headed for like a really, really bad end, which is not always the best. But Riley Adamson is a tracker, and she brings people home who have been lost, usually their children. And she's sort of like the last hope for people. When all else fails, Riley steps in. Now, she doesn't always bring people home alive, but she does give people the closure that they need. And her magic is like very, very specific. When you first start reading the series, like you don't fully understand how it works. But as you get to know Riley, Shannon Mayer does a really good job of dropping you little hints as things progress, so that as you're getting to know her as a person, you're also building your understanding of her magic. And in some ways, I feel like Riley is learning some things about her own magic as things go on. She has a werewolf that she has kind of taken under her wing when he was tossed out of his pack. She also forms a really close relationship with a young harpy who has been abandoned. And there's an FBI agent who has been on her tail for quite a long time and believes that she has done something very, very bad, which she has not done, but FBI agent believes that she has. And he is like dogging her steps hardcore. Now, all of these people are kind of misfits in one way or another. But as the series goes on, they become a very, very cohesive unit and build their own sort of, you know, family of sorts. It's hard to talk about this series without giving a lot of things away. There is a kind of on again, off again, like romance that goes throughout the story where, you know, Riley isn't always sure how she feels, but where normally that would feel really frustrating to me, I actually found that it fit Riley and the situation quite well. Like, it would be kind of out of character, I think, for Riley to fall like hard and fast and be completely all in right away. These books are pretty short. There are 10 of them in total. I have read like the first 6 or 7 so far. And I really enjoy them. Shannon Mayer is kind of a bit of a hidden gem in urban fantasy. I feel like when people start listing the urban fantasy greats, Shannon Mayer doesn't get talked about. And I wish she did. So definitely pick this up if you haven't already. This is Priceless, Riley Adamson, Book 1 by Shannon Mayer.
I love this series so much. I agree yes. that it does kind of have this post-apocalyptic kind of bent, especially the farther along you go. I also think that this is a series that gets progressively darker as far as, you know, the farther you go into it, but there's always light and hope. My second book of the evening is Come As You Are, Bluebird Basin No. 1 by Jess K. Hardy. And this book is a gem that if you like contemporary romance, if you like romance with older, more mature characters, if you like romance about people who've lived some hard life, this book is for you. So Ashley is in her 40s and she is struggling to keep her ski lodge, her ski mountain going. And it's been quite a struggle, especially since her cheating ex-husband is doing his best to buy her mountain and to coerce her into selling it and putting a lot of pressure on her. And all she wants is just to, you know, carry on the legacy that her parents started. That was her dad's dream. And now her mom is still assisting her with running this ski lodge. And, you know, she wants it to not change. She doesn't want to give up the things that made it special. And yet she's really struggling to pay the bills. She's kind of getting behind. She's worried about how she's going to pay her staff and get through another season. Well, her mother, who Ashley doesn't always see eye to eye with, and they have a kind of conflicted relationship, but her mother forces Ashley to interview somebody for to bring in some new staff this year. And that is Matthew Madigan. And Madigan is the director of a sober living home and, you know, basically is kind of hoping that he can bring his guys who are living with him at the sober living home to this mountain to kind of help run the ski resort, ski lodge. And Ashley isn't sure this is the greatest idea. I mean, she's really not sure and she's very uncomfortable and worried about like lawsuits and worried about like, well, what if there's relapse? And, you know, she just has a lot of uncertainty, but after a lot of thought and looking at, you know, her bank account, she decides that they can start doing this on a trial basis. So Madigan and the guys, they move in to these little cabins on the mountain and begin basically working their asses off for Ashley to demonstrate their willingness and their commitment to helping keep the mountain open for the season. Madigan is an interesting character. He's in his early 50s. He was a grunge rocker back in the day, actually a pretty famous grunge rocker. And after some pretty stressful life situations, he now, for the last decade, has been running this sober living home, the sober living community. And so he's very committed to supporting the guys that live with him as they are, you know, pursuing a sober living lifestyle. But, you know, for the first time in a long time, he's seeing beyond his professional life to Ashley, and he's very interested in her. And so he agrees to take ski lessons from her because he doesn't like heights. He's afraid of the chairlift. He doesn't want to go up the mountain. That's not his thing. But he will do this for her if, in exchange, she lets him kind of train her St. Bernard in search and rescue. And this book kind of focuses on a slow building, slow burn relationship between Ashley and Madigan. And that part is gorgeous, of course, because I love a good romance, especially with mature characters. But what I also loved is how all of these different men who are up on this mountain use this experience in a way to kind of learn truths about themselves. And as they're all working together, they're supporting each other in their goals and in their plans for the future. And Ashley is a pivotal part of that, despite her misgivings in the beginning. And, you know, these people all together become sort of this gorgeous, this mountain, this ski resort kind of comes like a place for people to gather and find kind of a family environment in which to, you know, try to continue with like a sober lifestyle or working together to enhance what the ski lodge can do for people. As Ashley and Madigan and the guys are settling into life at Bluebird Basin, unfortunately, her douchebag ex-husband is not going away quietly and continues to try to pressure Ashley in increasingly coercive ways to sell her ski resort to him and his much more flashy ski resorts down the way. And when something happens where Ashley begins to question everything that she's building with both Madigan and the guys in the sober living home, she has to decide, and Madigan has to decide, if this is sort of like a relationship that has an expiration date, or if they both have the courage to kind of go into things more on a long-term basis. I love this book. There's mixtapes in it. There's great like discussion of music, a beautiful romance. And like I said, just a community of people coming together both to support each other and to support this ski mountain. And I hope that if you enjoy a book like this, you will pick up Come As You Are, Bluebird Basin, Book One by Jess K. Hardy.
I believe the second one, at least in audio, is coming out next month.
Yes, I think it's like May 28th, and I cannot wait. And it's very fabulously narrated by Andy Arndt, who is an incredible narrator, and also Stephen Bourne, who did an incredible job with a more mature character. I loved it.
The next book I'm going to talk about an author that I newly discovered and that is just as amazing as everyone said she was. And I talked about a book by her maybe a couple episodes ago and not the most popular. But today I will talk about the most popular book because I feel like it is so demonstrative of what we're trying to reflect today. I also read it really recently and I loved every second of it. So this is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And you got it right, Seven Husbands. And as you might have guessed, this book is about Evelyn Hugo, who finally decides to tell her story. She's an aging and reclusive Hollywood movie icon, and she's finally ready to give the details of her glamorous and scandalous life. Doesn't this sound super familiar? I think that was one of the reasons why I really liked this book, because it reminded me of Nora Roberts' Genuine Lies that has a similar premise. But I feel like this is the only place that is similar, and this book stands on its own merit, completely different. But anyway, so our protagonist, Evelyn Hugo, gives Monique Grant the opportunity to write her story. And the fact that she has the job astounds no one more than Monique herself, because she doesn't understand why her and why now. Monique, well, she's not exactly on top of the world. Her husband has left her, and her professional life is going nowhere. So when she's selected to write this book, she is flabbergasted, to say the least. But at the same time, she's determined to use this opportunity to jumpstart her career. So summoned to Evelyn's luxurious apartment, Monique listens in fascination as the actress tells her story. And in this story, she talks about great friendships, great loves, and how life was for women in the 1950s, and why she decided to leave show business in the 18s. And of course, the seven, you got that right, seven husbands that she had along the way. And well, this is a tale of ruthless ambition, unexpected friendships, forbidden love, and so, so, so much more that is going to shock you as much as it shocked me. So if this sounds interesting to you, you definitely want to read The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. And every time I say seven husbands, I kind of cringe a little bit because I have one husband, and believe me, that's enough. So already just by reading the title, I'm admiring this person. But it's really nice to read a book where somebody's telling about their life and about the people that have been a part of their life, both good and bad. And, you know, when they're getting close to the end, the people that are still there, especially those they have found along the way.
So I want to talk now about Adriana Herrera and her Dreamers series. But my favorite in the series is not the first or the second. Instead, it's the third. And so while I will talk about the series as a whole, my focus is going to be on American Love Story. This is Dreamers Book 3 by Adriana Herrera. And so the basic premise of the series is that there are four Afro-Latinx men who are best friends. And they are coming from a variety of biological families, some of which are not as supportive as they might hope. They're each dealing with queerness in one form or another, with finding out who they are, with really coming into their own and understanding how they fit into the world. And always, like whenever the world is sort of against them, they are here for each other, like 100%. And as they fall in love and find happiness, like this found family unit just grows and blossoms and becomes like even stronger, like as the series progresses. So in American Love Story, we follow Patrice, who is one of the men who make up like the core group. And he was born in Haiti. He is a professor, and he knows that there's a big difference in the way people are treated, especially when we talk about the criminal justice system. And so he's trying to make this a big part of the classes that he teaches. And, you know, he doesn't want to just talk the talk. He wants to make sure that he's living life, you know, in a way that he can be proud of. Now, last year, he was involved in a one-night stand with a man named Easton, who comes from a really wealthy white family. He's a district attorney. And so in so many ways, Easton is like everything that Patrice should be avoiding, he thinks. And so they have this one night stand. They don't see each other for quite a while. And then suddenly they find out that they are once again in each other's orbit. And now the feelings between them are becoming really intense. You know, things that were sort of ignited during the one night stand have had a lot of time to kind of spark and grow. And now they really are attracted to each other in a way that neither has experienced before. But there are, you know, some major differences in their lives, and they're not sure if this is a relationship that can work. So this is a beautiful romance where people are really doing the work to stay together. You know, it's not a book where everything is sunshine and rainbows all the time and you fall in love and your life is suddenly perfect. It shows that all of these things take work and commitment. And as we're watching Easton and Patrice kind of reckon, you know, with their own feelings, we're also seeing Patrice's friends like having his back and really helping him understand, you know, what it's going to take for him to be happy and welcoming Easton into the fold. It's a gorgeous series. Like one of the books is about a food truck operator. There's a librarian. There's just so much here to love. And Adriana Herrera is an incredibly talented writer who gives us characters that people could relate to. Like, even if your life experiences don't necessarily mesh with what the characters are experiencing, there are elements of their personalities and their kind of lived experience that sort of transcend a lot of the differences that people have in their lives. And she just kind of reminds us that we're all human and in some ways, you know, we're connected to one another. So this is American Love Story. It's Dreamers, Book 3 by Adriana Herrera.
And I need to read this series. I am remiss.
Yes, it's so, so good.
So earlier, Shannon was saying that urban fantasy is a genre that really kind of oftentimes has some really great found family themes. And I have actually surprisingly found a similar theme throughout a lot of the post-apocalyptic fiction that I've read.
And oh, yes.
Yes, the best. And so tonight I'm going to talk about one of my most favorite post-apocalyptic books where I feel like found family is especially strong. This is Mordacious, the City series, book one by Sarah Lyons Fleming. And this is in the same universe as her Until the End of the World series. And you can read these two trilogies. You don't have to read one before the other. You can go either way. Now, in Mordacious, we are in New York City, and the book opens with Sylvie Rossi, who is in a hospital in New York City, and she's there sitting beside the hospital bed of her dying mother. And Sylvie does not have a good relationship with her mother, but she's trying to be a dutiful daughter, so she's sitting there, resentful and kind of filled with lots of angst about her mother as she is taking her sweet time passing away. And I'm sorry, that sounds very mean, I realize. But, you know, Sylvie did not have an easy life. And so she's sitting there kind of reminiscing and stuff. And then into the hospital room walks her best friend, Grace. And Grace is like her ride or die. She's And she's the one that Sylvie can always turn to in times of stress and joy. And she's just the one that will call Sylvie out if she's being Sylvie, or, you know, she's always there to support her. And so she's with Sylvie as her mother draws her last breath. And they've just been kind of sitting in there all day in this hospital room watching some sort of cable network station.
Bad TV.
Yeah, bad TV. And so Sylvie's kind of perplexed why, even after she's like, you know, hit the call button, like no nurses are coming. And she's like, I just want to get out of here. My mom has passed away now. I just kind of want this part to be in the rear view. Well, when they step out into the hallway of the ICU, things right away just feel kind of strange. They wait a long time for a nurse who never materializes. And there's just some weird stains on the floor. And not to make this go on too long, but let's just say they're at the beginning, the start of the awakening of the zombies in New York City. And of course, a hospital would be one of the places that would be considered ground zero for such a thing to occur. And so through a series of very stressful moments, they end up in a basement cafeteria with a group of survivors from the hospital, including a nurse named Maria. And they ended up trapped in this sort of like cafeteria situation with some patients and some other hospital workers and some other, you know, people who were visiting the hospital for weeks of time. And the world outside is going more and more to hell and things are getting more and more dire. The bridges are blown. So they're actually trapped in New York City. They cannot get out. But finally, the group of survivors is forced to flee the hospital. And Maria, the nurse, offers that Grace and Sylvie and Jorge and a couple others, if they want to, can come and stay in a place that she knows in this city that belongs to a family friend. And in that place, there is, you know, there's food and water and protection. And at first, Sylvie's kind of like, I don't want to put my lot in with anybody else. I don't trust anyone. But, you know, because it's kind of like living in the Wild West and there's like danger around every corner, she and Grace end up going to this house that belongs to a family friend of Maria's. And they begin kind of setting up with Maria and Jorge a safe place to kind of ride out what they think is going to be a temporary blip in the world, which so sad for them. And as they're getting more and more comfortable with each other, another person shows up, which is the brother of the woman whose apartment they're in. And he's looking for his sister, who is not in the city. But don't worry, she has her own series. And all of them together, they continue gathering in people into this apartment and creating this gorgeous kind of community, found family, strong friendships as they learn how to navigate the zombie apocalypse. And I get that I haven't really said very much about this book, but it's something that should be experienced instead of me telling you everything about it. It's violent, it's gory, and it's nonstop action, but at its heart, it's a very character-driven book about this group of survivors who band together to try to make it through the most trying time I can imagine. And Sarah Lyons Fleming is, in my opinion, kind of the queen of the post-apocalyptic genre. I think she's an amazing author. She writes Yes. about characters that we care about, and she tells very intense and intricate stories that keep you reading long into the night. And like each book, I mean, they're long books. Like I want to say this book in audio is like
17, 18 hours.
I think the longest one I've read by her is like 22 hours. I think there's one that long, but I mean,
Inspiration or
it's either Inspiration or it
like
might
26,
be
26, 27 hours.
Yeah.
So
and
long.
I think her, World Departed, her,
Oh yes.
Oh my God.
Cascadia
series has books that long too. She writes big, meaty, gorgeous books. And so you can either start with the City series or the series about Eric's sister, Cassie, which is Until the End of the World. And either is a good place to start. I'd probably start if it were me with Until the End of the World, but it's up to you. But these books are amazing. So if you like books that include lots of gore, lots of zombies, lots of violence, a little bit of romance, and just amazing, amazing coming together of people in crisis, definitely pick up Mordacious, the City series, book one by Sarah Lyons Fleming.
I just reread this series, like the whole thing, when the third Cascadia book came out yes. in audio. And now hearing you talk about it, like it makes me kind of want to do it again.
So the next book I'm going to talk about is from a series that was mentioned by Stacy, I think a few episodes ago. And this is a series called the MomCom series. And each series is written by a different author. But the series, all the books in the series connect, and each book is about a different character. I guess you could say that technically they could be read standalone because they are by different authors. But, you know, I'm a stickler for order, and I say start with book one. The other ones definitely have some spoilery elements in them if you don't read them in order. However, Stacy, I believe, spoke about book two. So I'm going to talk about book one just because I started the series and I was completely hooked by this book. So this is Mother Faker, The Mom Comes, book one by Brittany Nicole. And Mother Faker is about Livy. Livy, where our story starts, is in a pretty bad marriage, has three very young kids. And, well, she's about to take her last vacation before her divorce. So, basically, her and her husband are divorcing, and she said that he needs to be with the kids while she has her weekend away before they actually separate. And, well, during this awesome weekend away, she decides that it's a good idea that her and her three friends, who are also single mothers for various reasons, and their children all move into this dilapidated brownstone in, oh, one of my favorite places, Boston. Because that's a great idea. You know, the brownstone is falling apart. But they basically want to make a mom community where they can support each other as single mothers and support and love each other and their children. It sounds like a brilliant idea, doesn't it? Well, it could also be the most insane thing she does this year. But, well, the night before she moves in, Livy gets drunk and marries her boss. And, well, she doesn't have to worry because apparently the wedding is all fake. At least everything after I do will be. But even though Beckett Langfield is grumpy, rich, and hates kids, And Livy is an overworked, overstressed, very unhappy mom. The only reason they're getting married is because he needs to fix a PR nightmare, a public relations disaster. And, well, she's available as his faithful personal assistant, general manager, to help him fix it. And considering that she just got divorced, Livy's not looking for anything serious and not looking to do anything like marriage again. But when Beckett makes her an offer that she can't refuse, he'll help fix up their broken house, and all she has to do is pretend to the public that they're happily married. Isn't that easy? Take a few pictures, do the PDA thing. But if someone could just remind Beckett that it's all fake, that'd be great. So this is Mother Faker, The Mom Coms, Book 1 by Brittany Nicole. And when I tell you that, honestly, I've read all four books, and Livy and Beckett's story is my absolute favorite. I love Beckett. I love his personality so much. I love how he works with Livy. Just everything about this first book in this series. You know, I always say this. I say this a lot. I mean, mostly in urban fantasy, but usually when you have a series, the first book is focused, is not necessarily the best. Even with romantic trilogies, you know, you're always looking forward to the third one, and the first couple are a few buildups, which you enjoy, but it's not the same. No, this book just went in with a bang. I enjoyed so much the world that they built. I enjoyed the kids. I love the friendship that these single moms have, how they're true to themselves and each other without judgment. It's just probably the best found family book I've read this year, period.
So I started with a historical, and I'm going to end with a historical. And this is, I very firmly believe, one of the very best historical romance series out there. This is The Brothers Sinister by Courtney Milan. And Milan has written a lot of great stuff, but I kind of feel like she can't top this series. And I'm not sure anybody else really can either. So the first book is The Duchess Wars. And again, this is Brothers Sinister, Book 1. By Courtney Milan. And this is about a group of friends who met in a British boarding school when they were young. And each of them has some sort of like difficulty in their lives that makes them feel like they don't quite fit, even though in a lot of ways they're very privileged. You know, a lot of them are like, you know, titled nobility, but things just don't quite click into place in some very, very key ways. And this means that they rely like so, so heavily on one another. And they form, you know, kind of a, like a band of misfits that becomes a family of sorts. So this first book is about Robert, and he is a duke, but he learns pretty early on that he has a half-brother, and this kind of rocks his world. His biological family is in all sorts of upheaval about this, and nobody really knows how to handle it. And this becomes even more challenging when Robert's half-brother ends up at boarding school with him. And so he is kind of forced to choose, like, is he going to bring him into his group of friends? Are they going to be enemies? Like, how is this going to work? And ultimately, they do form a friendship and really allow their relationship as brothers to bloom. So now everyone is grown up, living their lives, but they still have this really strong connection to one another. Now it's time for Robert to marry. He's a duke and he needs an heir, and you know, there's all kinds of family pressure for him to like continue the line. But he sets his sights on this really shy, kind of bookish young woman named Minnie. And Minnie does not want to be the center of attention. The one time that sort of the limelight was on her bad things happened. And so she knows that the best thing for her is just to keep her head down, operate under the radar. And if she can find a good match, you know, that's great. But it's like being a duchess is not what Minnie wants. That's just like way too much attention. But these two fall for one another. And this flies in the face of everything that either of them expects or even wants. And Robert's family is opposed to this, especially like the Dowager Duchess. And Minnie really has to stand up and fight for her right to be the Duchess. Of course, first she has to decide that that's actually what she wants. But once she does, I love how united Minnie and Robert are in this. Like, you know, sometimes in romance, you feel like the leads are kind of at cross purposes. And that doesn't happen here. Once they know that they're in love with each other and that they really do want to be together, they are completely united in this. And Robert's friends, who are the Brother Sinister, really chip in and step up to make this a reality. This is the first book in the series. My personal favorite is the second book. But I think all of these have something really special to offer. There are a couple of novellas that are thrown in here as well. And so if you read like the four full-length novels, plus I think there are like two or three novellas, you just get to know a really great group of people who live, you know, in a time that we don't experience now, but who bring a lot of sort of our, you know, what we consider our sensibilities, like into that past time. And it is just so much fun with so much heart and really excellent found family. So this is The Duchess Wars, Brothers Sinister, Book One by Courtney Milan.
So how many times has somebody talked about Courtney Milan in the series on this podcast?
Oh,
because I'm asking this question because somehow we've been on this podcast a long time now. Yes. And this is the first time I've realized that this is not about like a biological family. I always thought that they were like all from the same like family. And I love books about people that band together and form their own sort of found family. And how did I not know that about this series? And now I feel dumb and I must pick it up immediately. So I'm going to copy Shannon, and my final book tonight's also going to be a historical romance. And I have to say that this series is like one of my favorite things in the history of ever. It is so charming. I'm talking tonight about Lady Daring Takes a Lover, and it's The Palace of Rogues, Book One by Julianne Long. This book is about Delilah, the Countess of Daring, and dear Dull Daring, her husband, has just died. And all of a sudden, she discovers that dear Dull Daring is not nearly as dull as a dead person as he was alive, because he's actually left her a mountain of debt. And the only building that she has access to that he's left for her is a brothel called the Rogue's Palace. And not only this, but Delilah also discovers that when she's at the, I can't think of the proper name for lawyer in London in the 1800s. Solicitor's office. Thank you. She discovers at the solicitor's office, he's also left a mistress, Angelique Breedlove. And she's just flabbergasted by the whole thing. She's lost her lifestyle and everything she's known in the blink of an eye. And not to mention, adding insult to injury, he also had a mistress. How insulting. How awful. And as Delilah is drowning her sorrows in a tavern, she ends up running into Angelique. And somehow the two ladies, they decide to sit down and talk to each other. Because holy awkwardness, Batman. Like, you know, they're both in very dire straits because of Dear Dull Daring. And now they have to figure out what to do. And Delilah is a very kind person. So she somehow finds herself inviting Angelique to come with her to this building, this rogue's palace, this house of ill repute. And what Delilah decides that they should do is turn this into a boarding house. Now, that's all fine and good. However, this building is not in good repair. And it's also not in a great area of London. It's down by the Thames. It's just sort of like in this sort of just not the greatest area. But she decides they're going to make it into the most amazing boarding house ever. And they're going to call it, they're renaming it, the Grand Palace on the Thames. And they are going to rent out rooms to people with discerning tastes, and they are going to make a living, damn it, because if they don't, they're both going to be destitute forever. And all they have is this building, and they're going to make it work. But as the two ladies work together and begin kind of rehabbing, refurnishing, and kind of doing their best to fix all the problems with this building, they begin to forge this very strong friendship, which is a surprise to both of them. And then they begin collecting lost souls to stay in this boarding house in the Grand Palace by the Thames. And they begin to kind of develop this little community in the midst of this kind of seedy area of people who don't really have anywhere else to go. And just as they are getting established, in waltzes Captain Tristan Hardy. Captain Tristan Hardy has tracked a notorious smuggler to this new boarding house, the Grand Palace by the Thames. And so his job is to kind of infiltrate this boarding house to figure out who among this motley collection of people staying there is the smuggler. But while he's trying to kind of determine who is there with nefarious intentions, he begins to fall in love with the widow Lady Daring. And then he has to decide at some point if his principles are stronger than his feelings and the future he might want to build with Lady Delilah Daring. Mm. This book is so lovely. It sets up everything. There's, of course, the romance, which is fabulous. But the thing I love most about this series is the found family that is built within the walls of this, you know, former like house of ill repute in this kind of seedy area of London, and how these two ladies come together under kind of impossible circumstances and create a haven for misplaced souls who need a place to kind of take a breath and to sort of like, you know, go and find it in a place where they can kind of figure out life's big stressors. And there are certain people that are in every book that always stay in the Grand Palace on the Thames. And then every book in the series also includes a main couple that come to the Grand Palace on the Thames for a variety of reasons and end up falling in love in this boarding house that has become so much more than a boarding house. And I love this series a lot. It just makes me happy. It is just like, to me, it's kind of a perfect historical romance series. So if you want to read a really great first book in a series about a romance and strong female friendships and found family, and just that makes you feel so happy from start to finish, pick up Lady Daring Takes a Lover, Palace of Rogues, Book One by Julianne Long. And I think there's six books now. Oh, you would love it. It's just so delightful. I think there's six now, and the seventh is coming out soon. Like, I think in May, maybe. So stay tuned for that.
Many authors do a wonderful representation of found family, among them Nora Roberts, which we all know and love, and has found family everywhere and amazing dialogue. And I love talking about her, but I always do. But nobody quite can manage to write such amazing, long, meaty, unpredictable suspense and weave in romance and found family like this author does. And while she's got many series within her largest series, which is the romantic suspense series, I want to talk about this book because I just read it and very much enjoyed it. Now, if you haven't guessed who I'm talking about, this is Beneath Dark Waters by Karen Rose, romantic suspense book 28. And I'm sure it's within a series that at the moment I cannot recall. But I did personally read from Romantic Suspense Book 1 in order, and I enjoyed it. And all of the interlocking series, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Chicago, there was a lot of found family. But I very much liked this one because of how everything ended up, which I won't spoil for you. So to tell you a little more about it, this book is about deadly secrets that are lying beneath the murky waters of New Orleans in the Louisiana Bayou. Oh, I love that. And well, in this place, there's no safe place for it. Child to hide when danger comes from all sides. This is about a public prosecutor, JP Cardoso, also known as KJ. And he's only lived in New Orleans for 6 months, and he's working on this really huge case. He's a widow, and he has a 10-year-old son. And well, this case he's working on is really high profile. It's a celebrity sexual assault, so you can imagine the publication, the attempt for non-disclosure that isn't quite working, etc. And well, it's made headlines all over the country, national news. But when his son becomes a target for kidnapping attempt as a threat to KJ, it turns out that he discovers his son's unsafe. He feels like the regular police force can't protect him, and so he hires a private investigator firm that's famous for their not only investigative services, but also their private security services. And, well, the person that's assigned to protect his son is Val Sorensen, who is a former Marine and who's glad to have found a new career with Broussard Investigations. And as her latest assignment is a bodyguard to 10-year-old Elijah Cardoso, she's reminded why she's a kick-ass guardian with a tender heart. And through her duties, Val grows incredibly fond of the handsome little boy and his very handsome father. But when the high-stakes investigation reveals an explosive network of crime through a revived drug gang, well, there's a bunch of deep-seated corruption in the New Orleans PD. And there's a group of murderers for hire that are targeting KJ, Elijah, and his bodyguard, and his star client. They're all scrambling for safety. So this is Beneath Dark Waters, Romantic Suspense, Book 28 by Karen Rose. And as I said, I very much always enjoy Karen Rose's novels because they're so long. And I know I probably have said this before, but I am intimidated by long books for some reason. Don't ask me why. I read at super speed, so it shouldn't really be a problem. But this is one of those authors that writes really long books that it could be 50 hours long and I will read it and I will not even flinch at the length, because after 50 hours I'm sure I will want more, even though her stories are resolved and they're never boring. It never meanders. It's just amazing from page one until the end.
So this concludes our found family episode. Thank you so much to Stacy and Natalia for joining me and talking about so many great books. As always, thanks goes out to Christine for all of her fantastic editing. And of course, we thank each and every one of you so much for joining us each week as we talk about great books.
If you would like to let us know your thoughts, you can do that by leaving us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform you use to access the show. And not only does it allow us to see your feedback, but it also helps other book lovers to find us, which is a great thing. So, I will be back next Tuesday morning with more bookish fabulousness, and some number of us will be back on Friday with more discussion of great books. Take care, everybody.